question in my server, serving me. Your computer will print, should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam, don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot get online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online at thecomputerguy.com. There's a click of a mouse.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you so much for tuning in to The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. It is time for the Adam, the Computer Guy radio program, starring myself, Adam Lepp, the Computer Guy, person with many tasks at the station. We're going to talk today's top and trendy technology topics. Keep in mind, we encourage you to email us with any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, suggestions, or even just to say, hi, how you doing? That's good enough for me. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Just like Hillary, and now just like Melania, we have a private email server, which is curated, maintained, and all that good stuff by yours truly, and so works fairly well. So, you know, we're just like the first ladies. We do our own thing with the email, and that's fine by my book. Computer news. There's been so much, you know, people working at home during the assorted debacles going on in the great year of 2020. But let's turn the clock back 25 years. Remember Windows 95? Remember the lines outside the computer stores? People wanting to buy Windows 95. Yes, BC, before COVID, before Amazon and people doing a lot, if not most or all, of their shopping online. You'd wait outside Micro Center, CompUSA, Best Buy, and want to purchase Windows 95, which was quite a change in functionality and scalability and other fancy technical terms from the current Windows 3.1. Now, 25 years, and there are still many things that I think Windows 10 has in common with Windows 95, the entire graphical user interface. There are similarities and, of course, many differences. Certainly, Windows 95 didn't take as much power to run like Windows 10 did. Computers didn't have hard drives measured in gigabytes. They were measured in megabytes. RAM also was measured more in smaller terms, depending upon what your needs were and possibly what other things you were going to be doing on the computer and maybe what you were used to. Was it a work computer? Was it for playing games? Or was it just for checking email or at the house? Of course, nowadays, computers are omnipresent. So many, many things in common with 1995 and many things not in common. Many things different. In August of 1995, you may remember, summer, just like kind of going through right now, that's when Windows 95 made its debut. It is arguably the biggest, most critical launch in computing history. Now, the late, great Steve Jobs at Apple was on a sabbatical of sorts from Apple. It was kind of forced on. I mean, remember the political goings-on there. OS 2, for you fellow computer geeks, was looked at as a possible successor to DOS and Windows, but although it's an excellent operating system, it never really took off. Kind of like the Sony Beta format for VCRs. Never really took off, even though it really was better than the VHS, but not necessarily does the better platform win. And at that time, Apple had graphical user interfaces better than Windows. So as is often done in business and certainly in the computer world, got to keep up with the Joneses. So, with the promotion of Windows 95, you may recall the news, the speculations, the gossip, everybody and anybody was talking about it. And also the hardware, the computers themselves, they had changed. Microsoft was launching their own AOL-type network. You know, you dialed in, and you could talk to people, look at ads, get email, MSN. MSN's still around, just like AOL is, but it certainly is not what it was 25 years ago. Some people think that Windows 95 was a bit overhyped, but it showcased a large marketing budget for a revolutionary product, and it kind of ushered in a new generation of computer users. The launch was obviously something that no one will ever forget. I remember the lines outside of CompUSA, one that used to be on Sawmill Road in Columbus, and computer stores and electronic stores everywhere. The massive diversity in hardware and some issues with quality control with drivers for computers. Getting, you may remember, the games not necessarily working, your video, and here in the radio business, important things like the sound didn't always work like was expected. And then sometimes happens, and everywhere, especially with computers again, sometimes the cart is put before the horse. And as also sometimes happens when a new product is launched, people end up waiting in line for it and not necessarily getting what they were expecting. Sometimes what you're expecting and what you're getting, well, they may be of totally different species. Microsoft support, and I remember this, they were criticized quite heavily for long wait times. And they ended up doing something which you don't like to do in the customer service business, but is a fact of life. They put a force busy signal on their phone lines. People didn't use email and didn't use, well, there was no Facebook back then, you know. Mark Zuckerberg, he was a teenager, if I'm not mistaken. So we didn't have a lot of the networking methods that we have here in 2020. So people would call, and again, they would get a busy signal, even though it really wasn't necessarily because the phone lines were busy. But bottom line is the launch was very successful and really ushered in a new generation of people using computers, new issues, and new things that you could do with a computer, and brought about the operating systems which followed Windows 95. Of course, Windows 98 and Windows 2000, Windows Millennium, also known as ME. Then, of course, XP. XP, I think, beginning kind of another generation of changes to the usage of computers and the way that we interacted with them, as it certainly has quite a bit in common with Windows 10 and a lot in common with Windows 7. Of course, there's also Windows 8, which, kind of like Vista, was a bit of a disaster. And there is no Windows 9 for some odd reason. Maybe Windows 8.1 is like 9, or maybe they just skipped 9 because 10's a nice even number. But what's going to happen in the future? You know, people are moving things to the cloud. They are doing things online. Things are stored on a server. Not quite sure where it's being stored. And people aren't really interacting with the computer in the same way. Okay, and here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program, that's what we talk about. You know, how have operating systems evolved? What is the hype with the latest and greatest as we approach the holiday season of 2020? 25 holiday seasons from the Windows 95 holiday season in 1995. Will people care more about what's going on in the cloud or on a remote server? And do people even want a computer at all? Many people are saying, well, the computer is dead. People just use their tablets and use their phone. Well, I don't agree with that. I think they can all coexist. I can tell you one thing. You can't do audio editing and radio show production on a phone. I mean, theoretically you can, but it's a lot easier with a nice 27-inch monitor and a real computer and a soundboard as part of the mix. I don't see that as changing. People do DJing with their phone or tablet, and that's pretty cool. And you can connect with Bluetooth or with cables or other fancy dancy methods. But with true radio and audio editing, there really has to be some of the more traditional hardware. And, you know, I think Windows 95, which we're, again, celebrating the, whatever the word is, the quarter of a century, pretty crazy, a quarter of a century mark anniversary of, I think has led the way to a lot of the modern radio software. Adam Lepp here, also known as the Computer Guy, here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program, talking today's tech topics, celebrating anniversary. Seems like there's an anniversary of a computer news tidbit almost every day. And we invite you again to visit our website to hear previous broadcasts of this and other programs by myself, by Interviewer to the Stars, Scott Spears, by Glenn Kobel, by the lovely Linda Sims, and many, many others. Yes, Nate Redmond with his interesting and many times surprising show about fun facts and odd trivia. It's on every Wednesday afternoon for your listening pleasure. Go to our website, wwgh1071.com. And I've talked about using tablets, phones, computers. Our site looks splendiferous on all of those media, all of those methods. So pick whichever one is your favorite. Bookmark the site. Tell your friends and family about it. And you might learn something. You might get entertained, and you might even laugh a few times, because especially here in 2020 and with the election coming up, laughter is certainly the best medicine. So, boys and girls, what else is going on in the world of IT? Again, the time frame, a little more than a generation, 1995 till, well, it's almost 2021. 2020 has certainly been an unusual year, and I'm thinking 2021 might even be more unusual, or maybe the word is unusualer. We shall see. Whatever happens and transpires, we'll certainly keep you abreast of the developments, debacles, and fun and games here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. With people working online, going to school online, shopping online, doing almost everything online, you could imagine that data security is an important topic, and we talk about that pretty much every time we get together here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. 2019, in the first 6 months, that's kind of hard to say, but that's the word. Check this out. More than 4 billion records were exposed in 3,800 publicly disclosed breaches, according to cybersecurity firm NortonLifeLock. You may have heard that Symantec and Norton have merged with LifeLock, and they are in the security and data business. A publicly reported data breach is one required by state law and reported by a government official, part of a public regulatory filing, such as an Security Exchange Commission, SEC filing. Could also be listed on a company website, on social media, a news release, or a letter or notice published in an accredited media publication. Could also be disclosed by a recognized cybersecurity researcher or firm. So many ways that we can find out about these publicly reported data breaches. Of course, how many data breaches are not publicly reported? Well, I guess that would be another story. That comes from someone who should know, James E. Lee. He is the COO, Chief Operating Officer, at the Identity Theft Research Resource Center, ITRC. So this Identity Theft Resource Center, they're a nonprofit organization established to support identity theft victims in resolving their cases and to educate the public and make it aware of identity theft and associated issues such as data breaches, cybersecurity scams, fraud, and privacy issues. Here are some breaches from last year. And I look at this list and I say, well, let's look at the first one, Capital One. Well, I have Capital One credit cards, and if you have a Walmart card, you have a Capital One card because they took over the Walmart cardholders and servicing them and providing their credit lines from the previous bank. The name escapes me, but it'll come to me shortly. So, your Walmart card, you have a Capital One card. Why do I mention that? Well, the reason is that 106 million records, that's about a third the population of this great country, were part of a breach in 2019, in March of 2019, from Capital One. Little chill goes down my spine. Bottom line is, folks, make sure your banking passwords and your PINs are secure, change them regularly. Don't use something simplistic like the word password or your dog's name. Mix in some characters and symbols to your password. Change it regularly and check every statement line by line to make sure there's nothing fishy, because you never really know. Even a big company like Capital One, they're not immune. Evite, a social planning website. Well, I don't really have a social life, so I don't use Evite, but if you do, I'm glad your social life is more exciting than mine, but I do want to let you know that they had 100 million records exposed in 2019. The American Medical Collection Agency, as if paying medical bills weren't bad enough. Well, the American Medical Collection Agency, more than 20 million records breached, which led to their filing for bankruptcy. So data theft can have some pretty serious consequences, lawsuits and even bankruptcy or going out of business. More than 15 billion records, and that's more than the world population, were exposed in 7,100 data breaches through calendar year of 2019. And it's serious business, folks. And that was before the events and debacles of 2020, where there's more being done online, especially things like school, where you never quite know what hands the data might be getting into and what ulterior motives some of these recipients of data may have. Adam Kujawa. We've quoted him before, and, you know, he's pretty smart because he's got a really good name. He's from Malwarebytes Labs, and I use Malwarebytes. So, again, between his name and where he works, this guy's obviously a possessor of a lot of brain cells. He said, during the period of 2020, we saw less activity from many threat actors who would normally be making all kinds of havoc. That's good news. Bit surprising, but it's a good surprise. The previously cited ITRC says the number of data breaches between January and June of 2020 fell by a third over last year. Again, surprising due to the amount of work being done online, but maybe they're buckling up. Necessity is the mother of invention, folks, and if you need to have better security, well, what better time is it than now to do it? So during this period, the first half of 2020, a little more than 163 million individuals were affected by breaches, two-thirds less than same period last year. Risk-based security says publicly reported breaches in the first half of this year fell to a five-year low, but still showed a total of just over 2,000. It said more than 27 billion records were exposed during the period, 12 billion more than were exposed throughout all of 2019. So why is there a discrepancy, especially this year, where everything and anything is being done online? Again, surprising, but it's a good surprise. Well, ITRC said it's a difference in methodology, how they compute it. Kind of reminds me of COVID tests, doesn't it? How do you compute what's a death? What is a positive test result? What is someone who has a disease? What's a comorbidity? It's a gray area. Looks like cybersecurity has some of those same issues. Either makes it more interesting or more complicated or probably both. Risk-based security includes information from outside the United States, but the ITRC data is only on events here in the United States. Now, as a national nonprofit that provides free services to victims of identity theft or compromises, the focus is on the number of people impacted, not the number of records exposed. And according to the ITRC. So, you know, how it's calculated, bottom line is one incidence of identity theft is one too many. But how do we stop it in its tracks? And how do we make sure we're properly accounting for everything? And how do we make sure that this problem goes away and never comes back? He said in mass data breaches or exposures, there are multiple records per person, which always means the number of records exposed will almost always be an order of magnitude higher than the number of people impacted. There is no one-to-one correlation between people and records. Now, regardless of the methodology that's used, getting the full picture of the threat from data breaches will be difficult because not all breaches are counted. Both the ITRC and risk-based security count only publicly disclosed databases. As we said, is it public? Are people providing the information? And, you know, if you're Capital One, you may remember that Target data breach of a few years ago, and I really came down hard on them. It's embarrassing. They don't want to talk about it. Again, Capital One, they issue the Walmart credit card. They certainly don't want people to know that they have some security issues. I have multiple Capital One cards myself, and I'm obviously vigilant about security, but you never quite know. And again, if someone does get his or her data stolen, who could be next? So hopefully they are buckling down and making this a thing of the past that will never come back. It's safe to assume there's a gap between, again, the number of data breaches and what actually happened. And that pretty much occurs in any situation, especially something like this, that you really don't want to talk about it. Every state in the United States has a unique definition of what is reportable. There is a variety of regulations at both the state and federal levels governing what a security or data breach is reportable, so it's virtually impossible to project how large the gap is between reported events and unreported or underreported data compromises. Adam Kujawa from Malwarebytes said some organizations may hesitate to report breaches because they're afraid that this will damage their reputation or make them a target for future attacks. Well, of course. Do you think Capital One is jumping for joy about this? Certainly not. They have enough issues with the various crises going on here in 2020. Certainly having a recent data compromise is not something that they really want to talk about. And it's also very expensive to fix these things. One thing about these crooks, and they are crooks, that steal identity, steal data, they're pretty smart. And you have to keep you have to stay ahead of the Joneses, as they say. And this is the modern version of doing that. Adam Kujawa said there may also be a delay in reporting because, quote, I'm sure there are thousands of breaches that companies don't even realize have happened for a few months. Sometimes new corporate customers run a massive scan on their network after signing up with Malwarebytes and find a huge spike in some detections well after they'd occurred. So we have to modify our own statistics to remove those outliers, or we aren't getting the whole story. The move toward working from home as a result of the pandemic and a lack of processes for dealing with a breach may also have slowed the reporting of data breaches. So maybe there are more, but they're not being reported, and that's kind of scary. But again, bottom line is, folks, be safe, be vigilant with your data, like everything else, and hopefully everything will be cool. As it really isn't that expensive or difficult, really not at all, to keep your data secure. Let the cyber criminals look for someone else. Hopefully no one will have data that is so insecure that it can be stolen. But certainly don't become a statistic. Not something you want to deal with, I can assure you of that. Delays in reporting are one possible reason for the reduction in the number of data breaches publicly reported, according to the ITRC. Another could be that cyber criminals are now focused on leveraging the data stolen in previous breaches rather than going out and getting some more. The significant rise in credential stuffing attacks, driving unemployment fraud, as much as $26 billion, according to the Department of Labor. Data-driven phishing attacks and ransomware attacks where data is not exfiltrated demonstrate the consumption-to-acquisition ratio has favored consumption so far this year. Those are some fancy words, but again, it's how it's manifested, who it's affecting, and how serious it is, and does one person or organization get several breaches? Again, one is too many. So let's try to stop it in its tracks. Not surprisingly, Malwarebytes, again, malware scanning software that I use and I recommend highly, they found a surge in phishing emails, again, forged from addresses that were not where they say they are, using COVID-19 as a cover for malicious activity that contains commercial malware, such as Ave Maria, and backdoor.netwiredrc, some well-known viruses we've talked about. There are remote access Trojan programs. They're called RATS. Remote access Trojans. There's a good anagram. They let a hacker gain unauthorized access to a victim's computer to monitor user behavior, to change computer settings, browse and copy files, and use the PC's internet access for criminal activity. Ave Maria targets large enterprises, while backdoor.netwiredrc is aimed at other types of networks. Other phishing attacks are hidden in messaging, including fake bank alerts, package delivery notifications, and email eBay bids. Well, it's through email, but it's impersonating eBay. We've all, and I've got a couple of these the last couple of weeks. I probably got about a dozen of them, not a couple. You get so many, you kind of lose count. It's saying that your FedEx package or USPS package is available. Click here, or they send an attachment. Don't click it, folks, unless you're 100% sure it's from the company they say it is. And sometimes it's not obvious. But if you don't know, as I tell people, call your friendly neighborhood computer technician and ask him or her. Oftentimes, if you smell a rat, there's a reason why. But it could be the other way around. But better safe than sorry is the bottom line. Cybersecurity firm Agari reported in July of this year that a Russian criminal organization that it calls Cosmic Lynx targets senior-level executives at large multinational organizations, mainly Fortune 500 or Global 2000 companies. The criminals send targeted victims a faked letter from their company's CEO instructing them to work with external legal counsel to coordinate payments needed to close the acquisition of another company. Then they send a faked letter from a real lawyer at a UK-based firm, giving instructions about how to make the payments, which are funneled to mule accounts that Cosmic Lynx controls. So a lot of the same kind of trafficking you might see with drugs. No other way to say it. There are a lot of the same methodologies. That's why there's a lot of the same lingo. Cosmic Lynx asks for an average payment of about $1.3 million. Compared to the $55,000 most other business email compromise attackers demand. One of the most high-profile phishing attacks was the Twitter breach last July. I'm sure you heard about that one, where hackers gained access to Twitter's internal software tools and took over the accounts of former President Barack Obama, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, and presidential candidate former VP Joe Biden, as well as corporate accounts for Apple, Bloomberg, and Square's Cash App. Tweets were sent from the accounts of 45 victims to promote a Bitcoin scam that garnered 383 transactions worth over $100,000. Three people have been charged in connection with a Twitter hack, including the alleged mastermind, a 17-year-old in Tampa. They start young. The dip in data breach statistics may be a temporary condition, according to the ITRC. At some point, data thieves will return to a more traditional pattern. So it's a never-ending battle, especially in our world where so many things are done online. Again, you smell a rat, folks. It probably is, but feel free to ask, to think about it. Don't open up an email unless you're 100% sure. And, of course, use good quality and regularly updated anti-malware software. We brought up Malwarebytes. That's one that I use, and there are many, many more. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH1071.com, and broadcasting in Marion at 107.1 FM. That's frequency modulation. Modulation. Or modulation. Yes. What else are we going to talk about? We talked about Windows 95 earlier. Let's give equal time. Back in the early 90s, you may have heard of Linux. That's kind of like a free open source version of Unix, an operating system that you can kind of customize and do many things, oftentimes quickly and more efficiently. You can kind of install it and play with it yourself and learn about computers. It's quite cool, to say the least. Linux came out in August 25th of 1991, again about 4 years before Windows 95. At that time, it was a hobby for one of the co-developers, Linus Torvalds. He was only 21 years old at the time. Today, how big is the Linux? Well, Linux, that's what's interesting. It's pronounced Linux, even though it is pronounced Linux by some people, but Linus Torvalds was the gentleman who was one of the main developers. So anyway, the Linux community, however you pronounce it, is estimated in 2020 to be more than 86 million users, including myself. I do stuff with Linux. It is wonderful. It certainly is faster, more efficient, just isn't as much software. But if you don't mind some of the do-it-yourself aspects, you're not going to find a better operating system. Awareness of Linux in the enterprise was obviously non-existent in the early 90s. Since then, it's become the backbone of many large and small enterprises, web servers, for example. And a lot of radio software is run with Linux. It's in the government systems, embedded in devices worldwide. It is a very viable alternative to the Mac and Windows operating systems. Software developers have been able to put Linux on more hardware platforms than any other operating system. Also, the Android phones, which I use, and tablets, they are a Linux-based platform. The Chrome operating system and the Chromebooks that seem to have come in short supply of late, they are a Linux-based operating system. And at some time, Windows apps may come to the Chrome operating system. So you can end up running one kind of app program on a different kind of operating system. Just the scalability with Linux is just mind-boggling. Recently, Microsoft, if you're a computer geek like myself, you might have heard that they've added the ability to run Linux within Windows. Together, all these technology expansions are driving a movement that will further link all of the computing platforms with Linux at the center. And that can do a lot of great things. I think it also will help security. We talked about that earlier. No computer is immune to a security breach, but Linux is certainly the most secure. And anybody that uses it can vouch for that. The developers are still the same people that have worked on it. I mean, you talk about Linus Torvalds. He's about 50 years old, so he's still fairly young. He and his colleagues still working in some aspects of the operating system. A lot of the same people that have been working on Linux since its inception in the 90s are still around, and many of them start young. So really, it's pretty exciting, not to mention the fact that it's free. You may pay for an installation of it, or some updates, or, of course, the hardware that may have it pre-installed, but it's not a case where you buy the license that you do with Mac or Windows. And certainly when you talk about a cost aspect, certainly no operating system can say what Linux does, and that's certainly a good thing. Many people don't even realize that Linux is being used in a particular device that they may have. You can download and run thousands of free, fully functional applications, many of which are better than the comparable application in Windows. Now, originally, as you probably know, installing and configuring Linux was not easy. And that was the problem. It was just computer geeks like myself, and even I've been thrown for a loop many, many times by Linux. It's still not as easy as Mac or Windows, but it's getting closer. And in many cases, it ends up being easier, and you can certainly customize it. And not to mention the fact that it does tend to be more secure. Many people have stopped using Windows, stopped using Mac, and they've gone strictly to a Linux-based system. Or they just use the Chromebook, they just use their phone. So it gives you a lot of different options. And now with the ability for kind of go back and forth between Windows and Linux, that makes it even better. And I know in my office here, I have multiple operating systems, including Linux, and all the computer doesn't have all the features that the Windows computers do. It's nice to know I can just go to it and log in, never really have to worry about it crashing, and if it does, it just comes right back up again. So it really is a good, clean operating system, and it's young, but takes advantage of many of the things that have been part of the framework of computer hardware and software for many, many years. So we wish a happy 25th anniversary to Windows 95 and a happy 29th anniversary to the Linux operating system. I think over the next few years, Linux will become even more predominant than it is here in 2020. Of course, send me an email. Let me know what you think about the show and what operating systems do you use? Do you use Linux? Do you not even see the reason why somebody would? Do you think Windows has everything else beat? Or are you a Mac person? Have you used a Chromebook? Do you realize that Chrome is a Linux-based operating system? Never really know what's driving some of the stuff that you use. And nowadays, you say computer, it's a very vague term because almost everything is a computer in some way or another. Technology and finance professionals are joining the ranks of workers in other industries by delaying their return to in-person office work until as late as the third quarter of 2021. Workers are hesitant to return to their physical offices while fears of a resurgence of the virus are prevalent. Many U.S. employers have postponed return-to-office plans because of recent bumps in the number of coronavirus infections, according to thousands of employees and managers polled about their company's plans regarding working from home. Blind is an anonymous community of verified professionals with 3.6 million users. They ran a survey recently to gauge whether tech and finance professionals had any insight into when their employers will compel them to return to work. The survey revealed that their various companies have postponed return-to-work plans according to the following schedule. Check this out. 33% until the first quarter of 2021, 14% until the second quarter of next year, 18% until the third quarter of 2021, 21%, no end date provided. That's over one in five people not knowing if they're going to go back to the office. Eli Diament is from Azurite Consulting. He said returning to the office is not only a health and liability concern, cost and productivity are key issues. His company recently surveyed 3,500 business executives and decision makers, revealing that managers and workers were not only hesitant to return to an office, but felt they were more productive working remotely. He said additionally, business owners found they would perform as efficiently and reduce costs by keeping remote work in place. Statistics to reflect what is going on in the world will take headlines as predictions of how companies will react, according to Fiorella Riccobono from TeamBlind. For example, she said a headline like, employers get major protections in GOP liability shield bill, led researchers to ask survey participants in what quarter employees are expected to return to the office. This particular survey polled 3,000 workers. It went to all blind users. Again, those are people with this anonymous survey organization. Most of these people are concentrated within the technology and financial fields. 60% of the user base works in technology, 20% in finance, 20% in other industries. In the survey results, she said, we see companies providing their employees with at-home perks. It's likely because it is more affordable to provide work-from-home stipends than to institute all the social distancing measures within an in-person office. Certainly, there's no social distancing when you're sitting in your basement or your office at home working. Very different when you're at an office where you park and you walk in, a commercial office. Now, employers will eventually have to account for temperature checks, sanitation, and having people 6 feet apart. And that certainly adds to expenses and adds to a lot of inconvenience. Eli Diament, we quoted earlier, said the Azurite consulting firm found one in four office workers would quit if asked to return too soon. It includes 26% of employees and 21% of managers. His survey also found that over a third of office workers indicated they have a better work-life balance now. The discipline. How do you self-discipline when you're at home? No boss breathing down your neck. Well, people are learning, I think. Survey found that 70% of workers think that taking public transportation to work is unsafe. Given the current level of uncertainty related to the pandemic, it's difficult to determine if this 70% statistic should be construed as surprisingly high, surprisingly low, or to be expected. And according to the experts, Are they over-dramatizing? Well, I think with respect to the pandemic, they are. However, I like the idea of working at home. Of course, being a business owner, I do work at home and work at my clients and come to the station from time to time. But if you're used to being in an office, it's quite a change of scenery and a change of an environment and a change of how you do things. But human beings adapt quickly. And so maybe this is the wave of the future. According to Eli Diament, the coronavirus pandemic, which forced millions of employees to work from home, has been an awakening for many employers who discovered that employees can be more productive, more engaged, and more loyal without ever stepping foot into the physical office. He said businesses can save a considerable amount of money by not spending on an office. To foster a safe return, office workers want face masks and investment in better hygiene before they return. One of the most fascinating points about the pandemic is how COVID-19 is inspiring many companies to rethink their workplace requirements. Charles King from Pundit, an expert in this kind of stuff, said, until a successful vaccine arrives and is widely distributed and used, businesses will need to take a safety-first approach to returning employees to the workplace. Those that do not proceed carefully risk sickening substantial numbers of their workers and possibly being faulted and sued if they fail to take adequate safety measures. He said effective precautions will take time and money to design and install and are coming at a time many businesses are already stressed financially. So you agree with that? I think they're over-dramatizing a bit, but I do respect the opinions of Charles King and Eli Diament and the others. So we'll just have to see. Obviously, working at home has many advantages. Scott Spears was playing Family Feud, and I called in recently and asked, well, what are the advantages? What do people say are the best advantages of working from home? The biggest one is the dress code. Do you even have to get dressed? But certainly, suit and tie isn't necessary. Just putting on regular casual clothes or just throwing on your bathrobe many times is sufficient. The child care, the pet care, taking a break when you want, even if you want to smoke while you're working. All that stuff is on a relaxed system when you're at work. And is that an advantage or does it make you less self-disciplined? Well, I guess we'll find out in our ever-changing world. I want to thank you again for listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. I had a lot of fun today talking about the anniversary of Linux, of Windows 95, trends in the at-home office, the work-at-home model, and data security. Are there or aren't there less data breaches in 2020 than there were in 2019? It kind of depends upon how you calculate it. That applies to so many things in the great world that we live in. We get together every Tuesday and Thursday between about 2:13 p.m. and 3 to talk today's top and trendy technology topics on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Be sure to go to our website, WWGH1071.com, to listen to archives of my show and the other shows, and as I mentioned, like the current First Lady and a previous First Lady, we have a private email server, which is maintained by myself. Please send me an email, let me know what you think, or of course, send a Facebook message. That's also a great idea to, as a way to communicate. Adam at WWGH1071.com. We like to promote other programs on this show every Friday between about 8:13 p.m. and 10. It is Friday Night Live with Scott Spears. He has guests, sometimes celebrity call-ins, and sometimes people like the golden voice Ted Williams are live with him in the studio or on the phone. You never quite know whom Scott Spears is going to be conversing with. So in addition to listening to his morning program, don't miss his Friday Night Live about 8:13 p.m. until 10 Eastern Time every Friday. Your ears and your brain will thank you. Adam Lepp, thanking you for listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio program here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.